the night of the election, I was actually at the Javits Center at the Clinton HQ. And I was like, I was with all those masses of people basically crying and, you know, just fully immersed in this almost funeral-like atmosphere as we were watching the votes roll in and just realizing with dread with every single state being called that, oh my gosh, she's not going to win, and he is.
Welcome to Uprising. Each episode looks inside what it takes to lead the most dynamic and successful cultural movements. Some of them in the business world, some in the social realm, some in politics, and some in between, to see why people start uprisings, what gives those initiatives momentum and keeps them going, and most important, what lessons can you learn from these movements and how to apply them to your business and even personal life. Let's explore the secret to sparking movements that move people into action.
Passionate ideas.
Controversial ideas.
Uprising ideas.
The power is now in the hands of anyone.
To start a cultural movement.
Your movement.
To move the world.
Hello, world. This is Scott Goodson. Let me take a moment to welcome you to the Uprising podcast. On this show, we have Lisa Hoflick, who has been igniting movements for over two decades. We thought what she does and how she does it and how she will continue to do it is so interesting in light of recent elections here in the United States that we wanted to bring you this story. Lisa is a journalism graduate of the New York University, an activist involved in the National Organization of Women, and is on their New York LGBT task force. For the past decade, she's been immersed in advocacy, leading policy action campaigns and women's and children's issues, centering mainly around combating human trafficking, domestic violence, gender equality, and transgender rights. So she's got a fighting spirit. She is very much involved and has been very passionately involved in the voice, being the voice of many people who have no voice. So Lisa, welcome to the show. Welcome to Uprising.
Hi. Hi. Thanks so much for having me, Scott.
It's a pleasure. So where were you the night, what were you doing the night before the election?
The night before the election, or the night of the election. The night before the election, I was thinking that I was going to be putting on my party clothes for election night and thinking that I was going to be celebrating the first woman president and just looking at history being made. The night of the election, I was actually at the Javits Center at the Clinton HQ, and I was like, I was with all those masses of people basically crying and, you know, just fully immersed in this almost funeral-like atmosphere as we were watching the votes roll in and just realizing with dread with every single state being called that, oh my gosh, she's not going to win, and he is. So that's where I was election night. It was one of those, we were present for history being made, but it just wasn't the right type of history that we were looking for.
I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who've been through the same process that you've been through, which was obviously great disappointment and fear, and but then a sense of purpose and renewed energy. And I mean, I think it would be fascinating just to understand what kind of have you gone through over the last little while to kind of get to where you are today, and how do you see yourself moving forward in the future?
You know, for the past decade, you know, close to two decades, I have been an activist and an advocate for mostly social justice issues centered around women and children. And so I had already felt very, very connected to what Secretary Clinton's background was, because that was my background also, fighting for women's and children's rights. But during the 2008 campaign, I volunteered very lightly for it. And for this past campaign, starting before the primary, the New York primary, I became even more involved in her campaign. So I became very, very invested in this. I had done the fundraisers for her. And so I truly believed in her as a leader, not just because of where I thought she was going to take us, but also of what she had of what she had done in terms of social justice issues. And I knew that she would be the right leader for us. So that's where I was, because her background and my background, they aligned with each other. And I saw her. So I saw something in her that would gave me hope as an American citizen, that this was a person who was really going to go and better the lives of the constituencies that I felt very, very strongly connected to.
But what the heck should Democrats and the millions of people who are the majority in that movement do now?
Well, you don't give up. This is how I've kind of explained this this process, or tried to explain this process to other people that I've had conversations with, because there are a bunch of, you know, there are lots of groups and lots of people who are out there trying to strategize. Okay, what do I do now? What do I do now? That was one of the first things that I heard right afterwards. I need to do something now. So the way I look at it is that you can kind of look at people in different buckets, and each bucket is a great bucket to be in, right? Because you can always find something. So maybe the first bucket is that person who says, I need to do something right now, and they need to get their hands dirty right now. They have that sense of urgency. And that is a great person where you can direct them towards specific volunteer opportunities through organizations that deal with issues that they feel are going to be detrimentally affected by a Trump presidency, right? So they can go, so if they feel very, very strongly that LGBT rights are going to be detrimentally affected, then they should go and volunteer for the Trevor Project on the suicide prevention hotline, all right? Or if they feel very strongly that a Trump presidency is going to go and do something have a negative effect on women's reproductive rights, then go and volunteer at the Planned Parenthood, be a clinic escort, do something like that, and they can get their hands dirty that way.
I mean, there's a lot of people, there's been cartoons I've read that you see these sort of Democrats who have decided to spend the next 4 years kind of with the headphones on and, kind of abdicating their position in society. But what you're saying is the complete opposite, that there should be a movement now for people to get involved on a local level.
Well, that's the thing. And that's the second type of bucket person that I want to get into also, where they say, I want to do something. All right. But they don't know really exactly what. And then you don't want to necessarily volunteer at the nitty gritty granular level with these issues. But they want to do something. And this is where, you know, the protests and the rallies come through, and the strategizing for a movement come into play. You know, this is a type of, you know, that's the type of individual and the type of category that we should make sure that this fire is always being lit under them, where the rallies and the protests and the meetings and the discussions, every single bit of it is a log onto the fire to burn, to make sure that this fire burns, and where we can grow the ranks of people dedicated to the movement, so that when we do have something really, really big that we need to accomplish, that individual is there. Because oftentimes, a lot of people, when they volunteer for just a task, they say, okay, I've done my part, and they wipe their hands and they go, right? It's very few people that actually come back afterwards. And we need to make sure that the fire is always lit, so when we do have a big, big ask of people, that they are there. So that's where I see the protests and the rallies really coming through in order to create a movement.
Do you have rallies or protests that you are involved in or will be involved in coming up?
Sure. So one of the biggest ones that is coming up is the January 21st Women's March on Washington. And from where we are in Westchester, people are renting buses, rally buses from across the country to go down to Washington for this. And even if you can't get into Washington, there are going to be major marches in a lot of the major cities too. But that is we're looking at that rally as a peaceful demonstration of unity around the fact that we as women and our male allies, that we want to stand together to create a united front to make sure that all of our issues are protected, not just reproductive rights and but economic rights also. And we also want to make sure that our voices are very loud, that we to let people know that we don't stand for the racism, the bigotry, the xenophobic hateful talk that has been very, very prevalent in the past election campaign. So we just, but it centers, I want to stress how much it centers around a peaceful demonstration. We are not going there with pitchforks and finger pointing and you did this, you did that. We are the right ones. So on and so forth. We want to just make sure that our voices are heard in the next administration.
How do you pick yourself up once you hit a bump in the road?
You've really got to evolve. And, you know, one of the conversations that I've been having with people too is, let's look at the Tea Party. Okay. Think what you will of the Tea Party, but they really created an interesting and very strong movement that has led to where we are right now. They saw the country going in ways that they were not happy with, and through very small incremental but yet methodical ways, they decided to change the conversation. Right? They saw that in the beginning, if you look it up, they saw that too much money was being given. With the TARP bailouts, they were really upset about that. So one person decided that they were going to send a tea bag to every single member of Congress that voted for TARP, and that's where the impetus started. But they decided that they were going to change the conversation here. Okay, they didn't just take it lying down and start bemoaning. They decided to say, okay, this is where we want, this is how we want to see our country, and these are the steps that we have to go. And so I think that that's what the Democrats have to do too. We need to look at how we are, we have to listen to the other side, right? We have to figure out why the other side voted the way they did, and understand that, and we have to understand that we have to switch our directional driving, I guess, of our platform, so that we can be more effective. We just have to find different ways of getting the same cap that we've always been trying to get. The Democrats and the liberal parties, we have been mainly glued around and centered around social justice issues, right? So how do we go about getting these social justice, other people to caring enough about these social justice issues that we do? We can't be just in the vacuum that we were in before, talking amongst ourselves. How do we go and convey this message? And I think that's what we really need to work on. We need to change the conversation. How we do that yet? I'm not sure yet.
Do you think the younger generation can be brought back into this movement? They seem to be so enthralled with their technology that they just kind of opted out.
Absolutely. No, I think that the generation, the younger generation was completely into this election from before. If you take a look at the immense amount of support that Bernie Sanders had, and even the third party candidates had, they were the millennials. They were the younger generation. I would speak to my 16-year-old son, and he was an avid Bernie fan, and he knew every single thing about the election from that perspective. Right? We can bring them back here. And I don't necessarily think that it was an issue of technology turning them off. It was the fact that both of the major parties were talking down to the younger generation. We assumed that they didn't know what they were talking about. We assumed that they only cared about student loans, and we were directing the conversation to them from an angle that we thought it should have been approached. No, that's not it. They do care about all sorts of issues. You talk to anyone from the younger generation, and guess what? They do know about Medicare. They do know about Medicaid, because they might have, their parents or their grandparents might be on Medicare, and they'll be on it at some point someday. We can't just compartmentalize the conversation around a person's age. And I think that that was a huge big turnoff, because I don't necessarily think that the major parties respected the opinions of the younger generation. And I think that that's another reason, another change that we need to make in the future. If we do postmortems of elections, you know, like the Republicans did in 2012, and their postmortem said, okay, we've got to look at the minority votes, all right? We should be doing the same thing about the demographics from an age perspective. We need to say, okay, this is where we failed. How did the Clinton campaign fail with connecting to the millennials countrywide? What can we do better? And what was our conversation really like?
Do you think the reason why the Democrats didn't win is because people just respond better to threats and power and negative marketing than positive? Are they too wussy? Do they need to be stronger? Do they need to have a very different way, a different personality? Are they just too accepting? It's too nice?
I don't know if it's an issue of being too nice. You know, if you appeal to someone on a visceral level, you will get their devotion, right? And I think that that's what Trump excelled at. He really grabbed people by the jugular and hit them in the heartstrings. When you are talking to a person from, let's say, Appalachia, who's from a coal mining town, right? And their family had been coal miners for the past, three generations or something. And where Hillary Clinton came and said, okay, I want to give you the option of being in a better industry. You know, you can make as much money, putting together solar panels and whatnot. And Trump comes in and says, listen, I just want to make sure that you are fed and kept warm and that you have the money to feed your families, right? That he's grabbing them on a visceral level, right? Whereas Hillary coming in and trying to attack it from an intellectual level, it wasn't so easy. And people, that's one of the reasons why people fell so hard for fake news stories, because these fake news stories were really attacking people from a salacious, primal level. You know, there was a story that said an FBI agent who was involved in the email investigation, the Hillary email investigation, committed murder-suicide. That got over 500 shares and retweets in the first day it was out. Now, why was that? Because it was salacious. It attacked someone from that, right?
But it seems like salacious. And also attacking generates more energy for a movement than traditional policy. You know, traditional messaging, traditional policy, traditional coalitions seem to have been trumped by salacious rumors and really playing to the bleachers on issues that are very, are needle.
Right.
So it just as a movement, I mean, I wonder if one big learning coming out of this is that there needs to be a sharper indignation maybe for this,
right,
for the party in order to galvanize people in the next election. I don't know, just a takeaway. But from you though, like from your background, how did you get involved in all this from the beginning? What sort of motivated you to want to even, become an activist and involved in these social issues that you're passionate about?
What motivated me is the same thing that's going to motivate a lot of people in the next 4 years, where you see that there's some sort of injustice being done and you say, how can I help? I can't sit back and watch this wrong being committed. What is being done to help? And once you figure out the avenues that are being taken, then you can latch onto one of those avenues. For me, I looked at everything from a policy point of view. I didn't have a background in policy. My background was in journalism, right? But I realized that in order for anything to happen, it had to happen through statute and policy. And that's how I got involved with everything. And that's what other people are going to have to figure out also. People who again, they say they've got to do something. Find out where you want to spend your time. I mean, this could be the next 4 years of where you're going to kind of be an expert at trying
Biting
to write. Exactly. I mean, again, find which area do you think is going to be detrimentally affected, and devote yourself to that. You know, for me, my areas have always been around women, children. I'm a woman. I have 5 children, and LGBT rights. I have a transgender child. Do what you know. Okay. That's the first way that you can feel passionate about something. You start working in your own house. What do you know? What are you comfortable with? Because that's the expertise that you can bring to each of these issues or these movements that you're going to be involved in. And by the way, there are lots of movements out there right now for people to get involved in. You know, Obama has a movement called Organizing for Change. It was started, I believe, in 2008 with his first campaign, and it's still around, and it's going to be changing the conversation and rejigging its focus to how people can proceed in the next 4 years. There is an article in Politico magazine that everyone can look up about how some of their conversations have been in people's living rooms or at bars, and they are discussing specific grassroots strategies to try to line up leaders for the 2018 election. These are things that people should be doing right now too. If you're chewing on your nails and you need to do something, and you know that your friend is chewing on their nails, and that person and that friend has 2 more friends, well, the 4 of you get together and you think of something that the 4 of you could do together in order to affect change. And then before you know it, your 4 are going to connect with another 4 and another 4 and another 4. And that's how you build a coalition, and that's how you can build a movement.
So just as we end up here, do you have any final thoughts you'd like to leave us with? Just regarding, you know, the democratic movement and your passions, and any advice you have for people that are listening on the show?
Sure. You know, so the democratic movement, you know, we've already discussed that the conversation has to change, right? But we have to look towards 2018 at this point. We've got to start looking at and identifying leaders who will be able to run for office into 2018 and 2020. So we can take back the midterm elections. We can take back back both houses of Congress, but also we need to build it from the ground up. So we're looking at candidates, not only for the federal level, but also for the local level too. If you feel that you can make a difference and you are, you know, in your community, then look and seriously think about running for a lower, local office. There are plenty of organizations that will help you run for office, that can guide you through it. If you are a woman, there's Emily's List, a woman in New York State. Eleanor's Legacy. They give out money to candidates who are thinking about running for office, to pro-choice candidates, and they will guide you through it. There is a campaign school. There's a campaign school for almost, that men and women can both take through Emily's List. Don't despair. I mean, the next 4 years, if anything, should make us stronger, though, because really, in the face of adversity, that's where you find your strength, because you realize, okay, this is how we have to move forward. And a lot of times that's going to make us stronger. We are going to devise different strategies in order to protect LGBT rights. We are going to devise different strategies to protect immigration rights, right? And immigration reform and reproductive rights. That's where we have to look. And we also have to look at state laws, separate state laws, because a lot of what Donald Trump is going to do is going to affect federal monies going to states. And if he wants to repeal Roe v. Wade, we have to look at how the states are all going to handle that. Like, for instance, in New York State, we need to codify Roe v. Wade, because our law is antiquated. It was passed 3 years before Roe v. Wade, so we don't have the same protections as we would through the federal law. If he wants to take away money from Obamacare, right? We've got millions and millions of people, 22 million people, who are going to be left without health care. And that burden is going to be switched to the states. Start looking at your individual state policy and how they would be able to handle it, and start advocating on behalf of that.
Lisa Hoflick, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Sounds like it's not a simple fix for the Dems, but think the main message is don't give up, and it sounds like there's going to be a lot of passionate people on your side over the next few years that someone's going to be able to pull together in a very powerful movement.
We're strategizing.
Well, keep on strategizing.
Thanks for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank you for joining our uprising today and listening to our show. If you missed the show, or if you want to find out more about who was on, or if you want to learn more about how to create your own uprising, please go to uprisingmovements.com. You can also download this uprising program from iTunes. Uprising was produced by Nicola Keneally and Adam Helen, with special help from Melanie Boardman, Karin Drakenberg, Philippa Freeman, Brianna Campbell, Fashad Faroudi, Mark Bruzzi, Will Isom, James Politi, and Jonathan Weeks. My name is Scott Goodson, and you've been listening to Uprising, what we can learn about movements and uprisings that are shaping our world in business, in society, and in between. For more on cultural movements and movement marketing, be sure to pick up a copy of the best-selling book Uprising, How to Build a Brand and Change the World by Sparking Cultural Movements, available on Amazon.com.
Music for Uprising composed by Charles Duchateau.